Hey, welcome to Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Kevin.
I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And we have a great show for you today. Let us know what's on the OR schedule for the day.
Today, Jason, we are giving listeners a look into the recent Obesity Week conference in Los Angeles. This is a combination of both the American Society of Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery and the Obesity Society. This is a third combined conference, and it's certainly grown to substantial size that is currently expanding most, if not all, the entire LA Convention Center. At the conference, I was able to learn about new emerging technologies and procedures in bariatric surgery, but also look at some other new and minimally invasive surgeries as well. I also had the time to sit down and talk with multiple leaders and attendees at the meeting, to include Drs. Aurora Pryor, Phil Schauer, Natan Zindel, Daniel Jones, Andrea Pakula, and finally Dr. Harvey Sugarman. Here's a collection of their thoughts and takeaways from the conference. All right, welcome back to Behind the Knife. I'm here with Dr. Aurora Pryor, who's a professor of surgery and vice chair of clinical affairs at Stony Brook School of Medicine. She's also the chief of bariatric and foregut and advanced gastrointestinal surgery division. She's director of bariatric and metabolic weight loss center and also the director of minimally invasive and bariatric surgery fellowship. And we're here at the conference because she's also the program committee chair for the Obesity Week, just the third annual Obesity Week. So, Dr. Pryor, thanks for being on Behind the Knife.
Thank you so much for inviting me to speak today.
Dr. Pryor, how long have you been part of ASMBS?
I joined as my first year of an attending and have been participating actively since that time.
Perfect. And how have you seen the conference change over the years?
The biggest thing we've done, ASMBS has been having an annual meeting for over 20 years, but 3 years ago we joined with the Obesity Society because we realized the basic science and the medical aspects of obesity that Obesity Society studied really added to what we did as bariatric surgeons, and there was a lot of collaboration. So joining together with them has really made this much more of a multidisciplinary meeting.
Dan, what was your overall goal when you took over the planning process this year? Is there anything that you wanted to see change from previous years or you wanted to incorporate into the specific 2015 conference?
Well, that's really the fun thing about being the program chair for any of these meetings is you have things that are your pet projects or your things that you're really excited about, and as program chair, you can incorporate those. So my personal things that I really am excited about are emerging technologies, and this year was perfect for that with two new balloons on the market, FDA approved, another new device, FDA approved, and just a lot of excitement about new procedures. So we actually incorporated that into the meeting in multiple sessions and training courses, and that whole buzz is carried throughout the meeting. In addition, my program co-chair, Michel Gagné, is very excited about live surgery. He's done some great live surgery in other courses around the world, and he wanted to bring that as part of Obesity Week. So that was his pet baby, essentially, for this conference, was getting to bring live surgery from three continents in, and it really, I thought, made the meeting very interesting.
I was unfortunately unable to tie in the live surgery portions, but I definitely got a lot of good look at the emerging technologies. Do you feel like that was your favorite part of the conference this year?
Well, that's the part that I really wanted to incorporate, so yeah, of course, that was what I thought was great.
Otherwise, you know, what are the take-home points that you're going to take back to your own practice? Obviously, you've been doing this for, you know, the planning process for a year, but what about all the other, you know, residents and attendings here? What should they take out of the conference this year?
Well, I was just actually talking to another surgeon about what we can get out of Obesity Week, and you can actually push the boundaries of what your knowledge is a little bit. So you might feel comfortable doing sleeve gastrectomy and then go and study about the neuroscience of bariatric surgery or motivational interviewing techniques, which actually is probably pretty good for you. But basically, you take home something new, something different, and build your practice in a better, stronger way.
Okay, and then I know you obviously the emergency technologies things, you feel like that's probably the can't miss event of the year. You know, the other question I had for you, Dr. Pryor, was, you know, what draws you to bariatric minimally invasive surgery? Why did you get involved in this practice in the first place?
So of all the surgical disciplines, bariatric surgery is really giving people their lives back. It's giving people who've struggled with their weight a long time and really couldn't participate in normal life functions a chance to be normal and healthy. And it's a lasting impression. It's not just taking out their gallbladder and not injuring a bile duct. It's actually making them feel happy, healthy, and really give them years. That's really gratifying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I hear that from a lot of the bariatric surgeons as well, especially at our own home hospital up in Tacoma, Washington. So, but Dr. Pryor, I appreciate your time. I know you're really busy here running around to make sure everything's going appropriately, but I appreciate you joining us on Behind the Knife today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, welcome back to Behind the Knife. I'm here with Dr. Philip Schauer. He's the Chief of Minimally Invasive General Surgery and Director of Cleveland Clinic Bariatric and Metabolic Institute. He's also a professor of surgery at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine of Case Western University, and he's a past president of the American Society of Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery. Dr. Schauer, thank you for joining us on Behind the Knife.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
Now, sir, it's been a great conference so far. We're on our last day. And I just want to get some background questions. How long have you been a part of ASMBS?
Yeah, I joined ASMBS in the late 1990s. That's back when the organization was called, actually, ASBS, American Society for Bariatric Surgery. And interestingly, during the year of my presidency, which was 2007, we pushed for a name change. To American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery, and that was one of the major results during my period as presidency, the name change.
Perfect. And I know you just kind of mentioned a little bit about how the society and the conference has changed, and now you've had this collaboration with the Obesity Society for 3 years. What other collaborations do you feel like you want to try to instill within the society and make this conference even larger and more academic?
Yeah, well, this collaboration with the Obesity Society, otherwise known as TOS, T-O-S, has really been a huge deal for us. This was also proposed in 2007 during my presidency, the idea of creating what we now call Obesity Week. The vision was to bring these two organizations, which primarily focused on obesity, together. They come from different perspectives. Of course, the Surgical Society is focusing more on severe obesity and patients who would benefit from surgery. The Obesity Society focuses on other aspects in addition to medical treatment, lifestyle intervention. They have a very strong basic science component and also epidemiology. So the idea was to bring all these elements together to provide, a completely comprehensive scientific meeting that covered virtually every aspect of obesity science and clinical management. Took us about 5 years to put all this together. The two organizations had to change the way they do things quite a bit, but we were able to do it. The first meeting was in Atlanta, that was 2013. It was a huge success. And here we are 3 years later in Los Angeles, and the feedback so far has been outstanding. There have been more than 5,000 in attendance. Registration has gone up every year, and the support from industry has also been very helpful to put this meeting together.
And now I kind of want to jump back to ASMBS by itself, and you've been a part of it, obviously, for quite some time. And, we have a lot of resident listeners out there. What is the role of residents in this society? Like, how can they get involved?
Yeah, ASMBS embraces young surgeons, and there's many, many ways to get involved. We do have a candidate membership, so you don't have to be fully trained to actually be a member of the organization. You just need to have a senior surgeon recommend that you join. There's lots of opportunity to get involved. We have several residents from the Cleveland Clinic here at our meeting presenting either posters or oral presentations. Several of our residents presented on the podium, which is a tremendous amount of experience. And to that end, there was a special session, which I actually chaired this week, was just for residents and fellows, with some senior surgeons moderating. The fellows and residents have a chance to present their work with very constructive criticism and coaching, really, by the senior surgeons on style as well as content. So that's an opportunity. Residents can get involved in committees. We have a number of committees, some of them very scientifically orientated, some more related to policy and advocacy. So there's lots of things to do. This field is growing like crazy. And there's a huge demand for bariatric surgeons, for residents who are thinking about what they want to focus on. This is a wide open area. And unlike some of the more mature fields in surgery, For example, you know, traditionally trauma and vascular and, you know, breast and so forth. This is a relatively young field. There's an opportunity for young surgeons to very early in their career make a huge impact.
And I actually had a chance to be a part of the residents and fellows session with you, Dr. Schauer, and I found it very valuable. You know, I haven't had a lot of experience talking on the podium, but I think the feedback I took away from it definitely will help in the future. It's been a great conference so far. What has been your favorite part about the conference, or is there a session that kind of stands out to you?
Well, you know, John, there's something for everybody here. It's just been so fantastic. Several things new this year. We had two live surgery broadcasts, one today, Friday, and one earlier in the week, where we had live surgery broadcasts from all over the world. A variety of different types of procedures, some relatively new procedures like, you know, gastric balloon insertion to you know, gastric bypass, duodenal switch, revisional surgery, you name it. It's fascinating to see. The rooms were packed. So that's amazing. And you learn a lot by watching live surgery because you see everything, warts and all. There were some phenomenal scientific sessions by top scientists discussing how these operations work. We're still not quite sure how operations like gastric bypass cause complete remission of diabetes. We know it's likely more than just weight loss alone, because some of these patients and some of the residents listening here have probably seen this on the patients that they are participating with. Very rapid remission of diabetes before patients have lost weight. So it's a really fantastic phenomenon. And there are lots of theories, and several sessions here at Obesity Week have gone into detail about different mechanisms. There's gut hormonal mechanisms at play, bile salt. There is the gut microbiome, which may be at play, alteration, energy metabolism that go with these surgeries. So there's some fascinating things. And again, it's for residents and young surgeons who are interested in trying to define their research career and to tie it in with a clinically relevant field, this is wide open.
You know, it is almost impossible to find something here you can't be interested in. And I think that's definitely been a benefit of jumping from room to room, seeing a whole bunch of different presentations. Been great. So we kind of, you know, a lot of this is the good take-home points to take back to your own practice. And, well, you know, Dr. Schauer, what draws you to bariatric and minimally invasive surgery in the first place? You know, why did you first decide to get interested? Is it something you always wanted to do?
No, this was farthest from my mind. And this is maybe a message to residents out there. I mean, I was one of these residents that fell in love with every service I rotated on. I just could make up my mind. I love vascular. I love thoracic. I love GI surgery. I just loved everything. Sometimes opportunity strikes, and when I finished my training in residency, it was just about the time that laparoscopy came on board, and I was just thoroughly amazed about the difference in open versus laparoscopic cholecystectomy, and I thought there might be a future here. So I then decided to do a fellowship, one of the first fellowships in MIS in the country at Duke University, and this is back in 1994. And learned a lot about advanced techniques in MIS, and took this technology beyond the gallbladder to many other organs like the colon and adrenal and spleen and many other things. And then when I finished, I got a job at the University of Pittsburgh, which was a phenomenal place to start a career. And I was looking for, you know, new frontiers, and bariatric seemed to be very interesting. So I tried to apply these MIS techniques to bariatrics. I thought there'd be an obvious benefit in these very large patients. And then I discovered a whole new area of investigation. It was just truly fantastic. And I haven't looked back. And it's just, you know, a phenomenal ride so far. And there's still so much upside to bariatric and metabolic surgery. But my take-home message for the young residents is just keep your eyes and ears open. And you know, you never know. Some new paradigm shift can occur that you can just jump right on and be involved with innovation. And it's so much fun.
Well, that was probably one of the best like rundowns of how you decided to become what you are. And it's, I think that's for a lot of residents out there, especially junior residents. You're still looking for what you find your niche in and what you want to do the rest of your life. And I think that was good advice. So, well, Dr. Shower, I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule here at the conference to join us on Behind the Knife. We're always looking for people to do the podcast with, and we wish to have you back at some point.
Great, John. It's been great sharing this time with you. And just a brief shout out to the young surgeons who are thinking about what they're going to do in their future. And I'll point out that the Cleveland Clinic is a great place to train, both residents as well as fellows. We have all kinds of training programs and fellowships in virtually every discipline you can imagine. So when you're thinking about your future, you know, think about Cleveland Clinic and at least stop by and come see what we have to offer. I've been very pleased with my time here, and it's a great place.
Perfect, sir. Thank you. All right, welcome back to Behind the Knife. We're here with Nadan Zinzel. He's the medical director of the Weight Loss Surgery Center at Jackson North. He's also the vice chairman of Department of Surgery at the Florida International University, as well as the president of the International Federation for the Society of Obesity and Metabolic Disorders. Dr. Zinzel, thank you for being on Behind the Knife.
Thank you for having me.
Sir, just going to go over quick questions. We're here at ASMBS, but first I want to focus on the IFSO, and I know you're president currently. So what are your goals and the direction you'd like to see the society move?
Yeah, I mean, you need to understand that IFSO is a federation of 61 countries that include the ASMBS, and that's the North American chapter, is Canada and the ASMBS. And our goals are the same goal of our members, you see. Better health for our patients, help the patients to get their surgery paid by the payers, make it as safe as possible, make our patient also aware of what obesity can bring wrong to their life and the other diseases. So we work in awareness, we work with insurances, and we want our members also to be updated in anything that is new and that is safe and good training and education.
Thank you. And what has been your favorite part about the ASMBS conference thus far?
Some of the good things you have here at the ASMBS is experts from all over the world are here, so you can discuss with them their own experiences, you know, like out of the presentation, it's not the official presentation, so they tell you about patients, cases, situations, problem with insurance, coverage, what are they doing to get better education, training for their members. So you learn a lot just talking with your peers and peers that you haven't seen in a while, so you met them peers. So social is also pretty good for that.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed the diversity here. Are there any take-home points from the conference that you feel like you would take back to your own practice?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is that we understand now that we need to work together with every of the association. ASMBS is the strongest association as a one country. So we need to work together with the same goals. So we discussed it yesterday, how IFSO and ASMBS can work together for guidelines, for protocols, for research together. And we developed 2 years ago something that is very interesting. Every meeting that IFSO does and every meeting that ASMBS does, we have 3 hours for the leadership of both societies to meet, to find goals to do together, to share information, to share a point of view. So we are trying to become that all the societies in the world go toward the same goals and getting protocols and standardization of what we do.
Yeah, it definitely seems like there's a lot of collaboration at this meeting itself. Are there any can't-miss events, specifically any talks or any sessions that we should definitely try to make?
Yeah, I mean, I'm Dave Sopressian, so we have 2 sessions Friday. We do one session that is IFSO World, that is related to safety and education. And we have one that is for IFSO Latin America, that is related to innovation, because as you know, a lot of the new things happen a lot in Latin America because the regulations are not as strict sometimes like the FDA. So we hear people from everywhere telling us what they're doing, new devices, new procedures, new studies. So that will be very interesting for everybody.
Perfect. And have you been coming to the ASMBS conference for quite so many years?
I mean, is this Yeah, I would say at least 10, 12 years I've been coming to the SMB's conference.
How have you seen it change over the years?
I mean, the biggest change is now when we put together with TOS, so the meetings are not only bigger, but also now you have the opportunity to hear from diabetologists, from nutritionists, from physicians, GIs, their point of view, that they were not as common. So putting together this meeting has been very good. Also, when you visit the exhibits, you notice that you can see also their products. You see the nutritional products, you see the medications that we didn't have the chance to see them before. So I think that's the biggest change. The other big change is now we were like a group of friends coming at the beginning. Now it's very professional, business-oriented. So there is big changes, but most of them for good. Most of them for good.
Great. Well, Dr. Zizzo, I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule to talk with us on Behind the Knife. So we always like to wish you have you come back some other time, so we'll be in contact. Okay, welcome back to Behind the Knife. We're here with Daniel B. Jones, Professor of Surgery at Harvard Medical School, as well as the Vice Chair of Surgery at Beth Israel in Boston. He's also an ASVMBS member and co-chair of the Verification Committee of MBS AQIP and the chair of the Task Force Essentials Project. Welcome, Dr. Jones.
Hi.
So we're here at ASMBS, and it's been a great conference thus far. What has been your favorite part about the conference to this point?
Well, to be honest, John, my favorite part was the social event last night where we got to see the Space Shuttle Endeavour at the Science Museum.
And what do you think of the take-home points that you would be taking back to your own practice based on what you've seen so far?
Well, what you're hearing a lot about is a really change in practice, less gastric bypass, less band, and a whole lot more laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on the single anastomosis duodenal switch everybody's talking about?
Well, I don't know about everybody, but those aren't the sessions I'm going to. I'm very involved with the sleeve gastrectomy and gastric bypass, and so that's not a procedure that we're looking at adding right now.
Okay, perfect. Is there any can't-miss events at the conference this year? I know you've already mentioned a few that you're definitely going to. Is there anything for, you know, residents out there or students out there they definitely should be going to?
Well, I think for residents and students, it's really just to get a feel for, you know, being at a large meeting, going to sessions just to learn all they can about all the types of operations, preventive medicine, public health. So I think there's a wide range of things that would appeal to medical students, college students, residents. I think for guys in practice, we're trying to look at the things that are make our practice best. And I think at that point, you're looking at going to sessions that have to do with MBS AQIP, quality improvement, best practices, clinical pathways, things that can make good programs a little bit better.
And I know you've been an ASMBS member for quite some time. Can you elaborate on exactly what the verification committee on the MBS AQIP is?
Sure. Basically, that's a process that bariatric surgeons put in place to make sure that the programs across the country are meeting certain standards. So really, with the leadership of the ASMBS and the American College of Surgeons, what we've done is we now have criteria for all programs, multidisciplinary teams, collecting data, reporting outcomes, quality improvement projects. All these things are done under the auspices of the MBS AQIP. Site visitors come out, check the programs, and it really makes sure that we're doing things as well as we possibly can.
Perfect. So, well, Dr. Jones, I appreciate your time today, and we're here at the ASMBS. We're interviewing, you know, important people walking around the conference and getting their perspectives, what to take home from everything. So, thank you. All right, Behind the Knife's here with Andrea Pakula, surgical faculty at Kern Medical Center, and is serving as the associate director of surgical critical care unit. She just recently completed a trauma critical care fellowship at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. So, Andrea, what are your favorite parts about the conference thus far?
You know, well, being a junior faculty that's new to bariatrics and just really developing my bariatric practice, I think that the most interesting part of the conference so far is seeing all the really well-established surgeons in bariatrics and seeing how, even though it's been so many years that bariatrics has been around, that there's still such debate over so many topics related to, you know, the various operations that we have.
Exactly. So, but I know since, you know, all your resume says trauma trained, what got you interested in bariatric surgery in the first place and the minimally invasive portion of it?
Well, I mean, minimally invasive part of it was all through my training, so I've always had an interest in that. I actually considered doing an additional fellowship in minimally invasive, but because I did so much during residency, I didn't really feel it was necessary. Mm-hmm. As far as the bariatric stuff goes, you know, it's such a problem everywhere, and we, you know, I work in an underserved area. Obesity is very prevalent in Bakersfield, as it is everywhere, but we see so many acute emergency type patients that come in who have had bariatric surgery at some point in their life that I was getting faced with. And so I really felt that in order to have a good grasp of those patients and what's going on with them, that I should, you know, I should have a better understanding of bariatrics in general. And so because of that, I started to delve into bariatric surgery, and now it's part of my practice.
Is there a large bariatric group you work with currently?
So at my hospital, which is a county hospital, there are just two of us. There, the two that developed the program don't do as much bariatric anymore, and they were predominantly open. So really, myself and one other surgeon are the two main bariatric surgeons right now.
Okay, and so far with this conference, what do you feel like are the take-home points you're going to take back to your own practice and use?
Probably, you know, it's interesting how, in a way, the pendulum kind of has swung. DS surgery, you know, the DS operation was a very common way back when, and now the sleeve, obviously, in the last 5 years or so, has become the most popular, if you will, or performed procedure. I think, though, that we're going to see that we're probably going to come around to some of the newer procedures that are variations of the DS and those other surgeries. And I think that that's something to take home, because we, you know, we need to be prepared for the long-term results of what we do with the patients and the different procedures that are going to be up and coming in the upcoming years. Also with the non-invasive procedures that are on the horizon, I think there's a lot of interesting things to take home and be able to offer the patients.
Okay. And is there anything that you came here specifically to see at the conference, or any can't miss events? You just kind of came to get the full experience?
You know, I just honestly came to get the full experience and just listen to the debates and listen to the experts talk about the various operations and all the techniques that are up and coming.
Okay. Well, Dr. Pakula, I appreciate you taking your time out for Behind the Knife. And, you know, we'd definitely like to have you back further for additional interviews if you're willing to join us.
Okay, welcome back to Behind the Knife. I'm here with Dr. Harvey Sugarman, a very extensive resume, but he's currently the Emeritus Professor of Surgery at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. He was also the past president of the Western Trauma Association and also the past president of the American Society of Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery, ASMBS, which we're currently at now. We're on the last day of the ASMBS, and I finally got to sit down with Dr. Sugarman here and ask him a few questions. And I think I really want to start off by going back to the beginnings of laparoscopic surgery and hearing Dr. Sugarman's thoughts on the first time he's seen this procedures, and he was a bariatric surgeon then, and see what he thought of it when it first evolved.
Well, I have to admit, when I first saw laparoscopic cholecystectomy, I was very, very skeptical. But within a fairly short period of time, I became convinced as to its benefit. But I also was aware of some of the disasters that came with laparoscopic cholecystectomy in terms of common duct injury. And the same thing happened with the introduction of laparoscopic bariatric surgery, and we should have all been aware of that and should have been much more on our toes to prevent similar things from happening. So, I thought the idea of doing these operations laparoscopically was terrific. The problem came when the instrument manufacturers went to different universities and provided instant weekend courses where people would come and watch talented laparoscopic surgeons do the operation, gastric bypass in particular, and then they would go and do a pig, which was actually quite difficult, and then they would go home and operate on people and hurt them. Mm-hmm. And there were leaks and deaths all over the country, and newspaper articles and TV articles, TV stories about all of these injuries that were occurring. And the baby was about to be thrown out with the bathwater. And fortunately, Dr. Walter Pories got on top of this with the development of the Center for Excellence program, which I was extremely supportive of. As far as myself personally, I guess I had done, you know, close to 2,000 open gastric bypass procedures. And I initially watched my surgical colleagues use a hand port to do so-called laparoscopic surgery, mm-hmm. and they'd come out with their hand white and ischemic, and I thought, I'm not ready for that yet. And then they were putting down the anvil through the esophagus. It was prior to the tiltable anvil, and a couple times the anvil got stuck in the esophagus, and I said, I'm not ready for that yet either. But when they started doing horizontal stapled anastomoses from below without using an EEA, I thought, okay, I'm ready to learn. But the way I learned was that I had the opportunity of scrubbing with Eric DeMaria and assisting him. Then he assisted me, and then we had a fellow who was totally irreverent at that time and still is, by the name of Shanil Kothari. And Shanil Kothari assisted me, taught me the attending as to how to do laparoscopic gastric bypasses. And by the time I retired, because I had to have neck surgery that knocked me out of the box, I had done about 100 laparoscopic gastric bypass procedures without a leak and without a major complication, and was also able to be featured on ABC's 2020 for operating on an adolescent, and in National Geographic on an issue they called Fat. So it was a great way to end my career, although I had paresthesias of my hands and feet and wasn't sure that I wouldn't be interviewed on 60 Minutes for an impaired surgeon operating.
Yeah. Well, that was probably one of the best reviews of laparoscopic surgery, especially how I got involved in bariatric surgery that I've heard. And I was going to ask this a little later, but I guess this is a very appropriate time. We're at the conference, and every year they have these sessions on new innovative procedures. You know, what are your thoughts on these procedures when you hear about them initially? And how do you go through the process of critiquing them?
Well, the one that I'm having the biggest problem with, and it's not new, I've had a problem with this for the last couple of years, are the major malabsorptive procedures, which would include the duodenal switch and the new SIPS or SADE-S, where there's spectacular weight loss and spectacular control of diabetes, but a very significant risk of nutritional deficiencies, in particular fat-soluble vitamin deficiencies and hypoalbuminemia and frequent foul-smelling floating stools, depending on how far they do or how long they make the common channel. And many of these presentations this week and previously tell how great this operation is and all the things that are good about it, but they don't present us with the data that we have to have on the nutritional complications of these operations. And the biggest concern I have is not just that they aren't measuring them, but my concern is, what about all the patients that are lost to follow-up? Who you have no idea what's going on with them. So I have a rather large dose of caution when it comes to these until we have a lot more data than we have. I mean, to be able to correct and have, you know, full remission and diabetes of 92% is spectacular. But if that patient's going to get sick and maybe even die from malnutrition or have to go back in and operate and increase the common channel, I'm not so sure that that's great. In terms of some of the other new procedures, like the single port procedure for doing for a sleeve gastrectomy, I'll leave that to the whippersnapper laparoscopic surgeons. I don't know how important it is to have, you know, one little umbilical incision versus a couple other little minor incisions around. I mean, my wife had a lap chole. She had, you know, four different holes, and you can hardly see any of them now. And so I'm underwhelmed with the potential benefit, cosmetic benefit, but that's all right. In terms of some of the newer endoscopic approaches, I am very skeptical as to their ultimate benefit. We'll have to see with time, but clearly going in endoscopically to make a gastrojejunal stoma smaller has not panned out. 2-year follow-up shows minimal change in weight. Same thing with making a pouch smaller, so endoscopically. So not really big on that. Putting a band around a pouch, that may make some sense. So things are changing. Clearly the sleeve has taken over the world, and I'm very concerned about that. I have a feeling that quite a few of these, maybe up to 50% of these, are going to be taken down and converted to something else, whether it's a gastric bypass or a duodenal switch. I don't know, but that is a concern.
All right. Well, you definitely gave the listeners who aren't here at the couldn't make the conference a good rundown of what's been presented. Now, I kind of want to transition back. I know you're the past president of ASMBS, and I've been a part of it for probably quite some time, or even the beginning of it. Is that correct? Or
off and on.
Off and on. Well, how have you seen the society change over the past, you know, couple decades?
Yeah, I was part of the group that actually started this society. It was ASBS at that time. And it was a John Crowell, John Halverson, Pat O'Leary, and myself went to Dr. Mason and suggested that a society be formed. He used to have a colloquium every year in Iowa, and he was amenable to that. He became the first president. Then Dr. Howerson became president, and Dr. O'Leary, and it was supposed to be my turn after a couple years of running the program committee. There was a floor rebellion, and somebody else was made the president. And with the rules that it had to alternate between private practice and academics, I felt that the society was going away from our original plan, which was to have a much more academic program and approach to the management of the severely obese patient. And so I dropped out of the society for several years before coming back. When I became president, we were still the ASBS, but at the suggestion of Phil Schauer, we became the ASMBS, putting metabolism up front and center in terms of the name of the society and what we were really trying to do, that this was not a weight loss procedure. This was a procedure designed to improve the health of our patients. I still insisted that bariatric be kept in the title because I think there are a lot of things that get better that aren't metabolic, such as venous stasis disease and degenerative joint disease, urinary incontinence, and on and on. The society has progressively gone in the direction we were hoping it to go in its academic approach to issues and to this meeting. Again, at the suggestion of Dr. Schauer, we teamed up with the Obesity Society, also known as TOS, to combine the meetings with the idea that we would have cross-fertilization.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to speak with Dr. Schauer, and he was very excited about the collaboration, which has been going on for about, you know, 3 years now. So, well, Dr. Sugarman, I appreciate you sitting down here with about 15 minutes of time. I know you're extremely busy, and you finally got to catch it before you took off tomorrow. But, you know, sir, we're always looking for people to be on our podcast, and we'd love to have you back some point in the future.
Okay, thank you, John. It's been fun.
Well, that concludes my interviews at the recent Obesity Week in LA this past November. It was a truly a great conference, lots of new technologies out there. Really great to see people from all over the world discussing bariatric surgery and the new minimally invasive procedures they have. For the listeners out there, there's a few things to keep in mind in the near future. We are attending the Academic Surgical Congress in Jacksonville in early February, as well as the Maddox Conference in March, and we'll be giving you live podcasts from there. In addition, we have a new website. It should be rolling out anytime now, just putting the finishing touches, so keep an eye out for that. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, dominate the day.
Just a reminder, we can be found at Twitter at Behind the Knife, on Facebook at Behind the Knife, and on our website at www.behindtheknife.org. We really want this to be an interactive experience, so give us your random fact of the day, your tips and tricks, or topics you want to hear. And we're also going to tweet out who we're interviewing that day, and you guys can send in your questions, and we'll read them live on the show. This podcast can be found on iTunes and any other podcast provider.
All right, looks like count's correct. Fash is closed and the dressings are on.
Until next time, thank you for joining us on Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Dominate the day.